Hello, this is John Galloway.
And this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is the Full Stack Videocast, a pair programming experiment where we build out a full working application spanning from server to web and phone and everything else in between while you watch.
John!
Yes, hello Jesse.
Hey, John! We haven't done a full stack recording in, I don't know, my
head wasn't from
back then, the last time we did it.
Yep.
So we decided to do this one unshaven, uncut, uncensored.
That's right.
Just us.
Yeah.
Because
it's funny that we use video when we talk, and then we've never used it on any of our actual recordings, so we just thought we'd try it today.
And now we know why we don't do it. We just
exactly. Save your time. No need for all the comments. Please stop the video. We don't like it.
That's right.
So we haven't done updates. We haven't done screencasts for a while, but we have been very busy. We did. We've done a lot of updates both on the server side and the phone, and also we've taken the show on the road. We did our first co-presentation of this at StirTrek in Columbus, Ohio.
In Columbus, Ohio, which was beautiful downtown Columbus, and it was great. It was great.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
It was a really good regional conference. Really solid.
Yep. So we thought what we'd do is just kind of do an overview of all the changes we've made, and then we'll kind of
this is what we're going to be telling you today.
Exactly. We'll spell out what we've done, and then we'll do a bunch of shows on those specific changes.
Okay. That sounds right.
So we thought we'd talk over some highlights, talk over server changes, client storage, Facebook, store submission, and next steps. And so highlight-wise, I think a huge accomplishment for an app that's a Windows Phone app is that we've deployed on the store.
Yay!
That
All
was
right,
not
you can
as
go
easy
to the marketplace, to and you can download Who Is That? And it almost works. Kind of works. Sort of works.
Actually, I mean, it does work. It's using local storage at the current time. So we'll talk more about that in a bit. But that's it is an actual working contacts managing kind of thing.
Yes, and we should do a whole. I mean, we'll talk about what it took to get it on the marketplace today. But we should do a whole thing on deploying to the marketplace because it was
a pound of flesh, a pint of blood.
Yeah.
I have meat.
One arm, one leg.
We also set up Facebook authentication. So I think we talked over time about some different ideas of what we could do for authentication. We wanted something that would work on the client and the server, and we didn't want to be storing passwords. And perhaps unwisely, I pushed for the idea of using Facebook authentication, partly because this is an application that stores faces and it's about contacts and people and all that. And So we've got that in place.
And it's great. It's very, very cool, very professional authentication. It looks good.
Yep.
We'll show that.
Yes. So we'll talk about that first, and then after that we can talk about some of the things we've done on the client side, especially with regard to storage and synchronization stuff. Okay, so one of the things we needed to do is set up the client-server authentication piece. So I changed around the services on the server side. After looking at a few things, we decided to go with an API key approach. And so the idea is when someone registers on the phone, they will call into a web service and they'll pass in a Facebook username and they'll pass in a live ID hash. And that was kind of interesting. We found out that the phone will provide some live ID information, but it's only an anonymous. It's a hash of your live ID information. So there's no way to say, tell me what your live ID is. And, you know, I can kind of see the point. It definitely fails safe and it's not going to release any information, but it was a little frustrating because it would have been nice if we could have just used live ID authentication. So this register method calls in and says, create a new user using this ID and hash. Now, as we were testing this the other day, we realized quickly that we need to prevent duplicate registrations. So the first time you register, it should do this. Second time through, it should detect that you've already registered using this username and ID and just return the same API key. So the usage on the server side is you call in, you say, here's my Facebook ID, and your phone provides a live ID hash. And at that point, this register service gives you an API key. From then on, when you talk to us, you pass in this API key. And the way we've handled that, we've got this query interceptor, and it reads the API key, and that may be out of, you know, the query string, or it could be out of a header or something. And then it's going to say, this current user is based on this API key. So then from then on, any other queries are going to be based on that specific API key. And this query interceptor is actually a standard thing that's supported in WCF. So you can just put a query interceptor on a request. So here we say, whenever somebody does a query for people, first, you know, before they're allowed to read, then filter that information down so it just applies to that person's user ID. So the usage pattern here is like each of us can talk to this service, and when we pass in the API key, it's like there's a custom service just for us. So when you talk to the service, it's only going to allow saving and retrieving people under your user ID. And then on the phone side, the way we handled that was we used this Facebook SDK. So that was out on CodePlex, and it's available as a NuGet package. And what that does, there's this authentication form. It actually uses a web browser control. And so during the, you know, first run of the application, it launches this form. It shows the web browser, which I think you'll show in a second, Jesse, on your side.
Yes.
So it goes through this process where you enter in your Facebook username and password. It goes through some steps. We grab most of this code off of the Facebook SDK website and then tweaked it to fit our application. So after completing a successful login, it's going to return us some information. It gives us the, somewhere in here, Facebook username. So it's going to query the Facebook username information. And so we get that. We also get the anonymous live ID. And that was something that we got from, it's pretty easy to look up. We found, you know, a quick search on this. Where you can just query the device properties and you can say, give me the anonymous live ID. And in order to do that, let me see if I can find that. There was a, do you know where that is, Jesse? That's in App Manifest? Or no? This. So we had to say we want to get information about the current user.
What happens by putting that in there is that when you register for the marketplace, mm-hmm. they note that. And then when a user goes to get your application, a warning comes up that this capability is used when they're actually applying to download the application. And it gives the user fair warning that we're using the identity capability.
Right. Okay, so at that point, you know, you go through, you enter in your Facebook username and password. We grab that information. We save it. We actually put that in isolated storage. So the next time you log in, we're already going to have your username and password. Also, then when you query through the repository, which is something they'll be looking at, we have that information saved, and we pull out your unique API key. And so that's only going to be, you know, we're only going to look for that at one time.
Just take 1 second. If you leave that code up for 1 second, it's not relevant to our application, but an observation that C# has evolved and changed and grown to the point where it's almost unrecognizable from early C#. You look at this page and the use of lambdas, and especially the use of lambdas, and the general approach in C# has really changed over the past few years.
Yep.
And I was noting on your other page you also had use of lambdas, and the way we handle events exactly, the event registration has really changed. Mm-hmm. So that's just been an interesting change over the last couple of years, is that I think at this point, even if you're not really interested in learning Link, and I would argue, yes, you are, but even if you're not, you really do need to become comfortable with at least reading Lambda. Fortunately, once you get what they are, they're fairly trivial.
I agree. Yep. Okay, so now that we've got this working, we've shown the server side and the phone side of the authentication. So the next step is obviously we need a running server somewhere. So we talked about a few different ideas about where we could put this. One idea is, you know, is Azure, which is cool, but we wanted to look at something where it was, we don't have any budget for this, and we're also thinking people building an app like this may not have any budget and may want to kick the tires and that kind of thing. So we wanted to look at something with little or no cost to get it installed. And we ended up looking at AppHarbor. And AppHarbor is kind of interesting. There's Hanselman podcasts on this. You can definitely find a lot more about that. But one thing that they do that's kind of neat is they'll check out from a Mercurial or a Git repository and deploy it to a server. So if we look at some of these previous builds, they all kept failing until today. And what they were failing with was they said, we didn't know, out of your solution, we didn't know which project to run. And we've got a lot of projects in our repository. So what I needed to do was create a single solution. And this solution is called appharbor.sln. And all it does is point at our server project. So I added that to our repository, checked it in, and then immediately after that, AppHarbor was able to say, okay, I know what you want, does a full checkout, build, and publish. And so here this is at whoisthat.apphp.com. We can alias this with a domain or something later, and so then this is where the phone application will talk to.
I just want to get clear on what you just said about AppHarbor. What it's doing is you tell it where your Mercurial repository is,
mm-hmm.
and then every time you do a check-in or an update to the repository, it's going to, on its own, extract the solution as long as it knows which project it needs and update the live production version. Is that correct?
That's correct. So then, as we talked about before, you know, we may not want every single check-in to go live, and so what you do with that is create more than one repository. So we, you know, have like a, you know, playground or a development repository, and then we'd have a production repository. And every time you do a push to production, the production repository, it'll do checkouts from there.
But that's pretty cool that you could decide to push your code to the repository and have it also roll it out into production.
Yep, that's true. So in order to configure that, what we did was you go into your repository, and AppHarbor has information about how to get all this set up. But so here, this is our Bitbucket repository. This is running Mercurial, and every time we do a check-in, we go in, and when I set up the application on AppHarbor, it gave me a URL to put here, and it said, this is how you set it up, and so I did. I popped it in. I, you know, click Save Settings, and now every time we do a check-in on this repository, it's going to notify AppHarbor, and AppHarbor is going to do the pull and the publish. Fair enough?
Sounds great. Okay, on the client, I think the thing to do would be to start by just showing the application running. This is the home page that we created in anticipation of having one or more buttons that the user might press, although we may actually get rid of this page and have the user go right into the application. But in any case, if you click the Create button, it checks to see whether you're already authenticated. Since in this iteration I'm not, it brings me to the Facebook authentication. If I click in the field, up comes the SIP, the soft interface panel. I'm going to hit the break key and use my keyboard and put in my email, and then it's going to want my password. Okay, with my password in, I'm going to click the login button. It's going to do an authentication at Facebook, and if that's successful, it brings me into the application and crashes.
Nice.
So server.
You don't have the server running.
Right, don't have the server running.
Should we redo that part?
No, I like that. I thought that was very funny. I think we should just explain that we didn't have the server running, and I'll bring that up, and that'll be just fine. Let's run the server, then go back to the client, run that again. I'm going to have to stop that and run that again. Now, this time it's going to know that I've been authenticated, so we'll have a slightly different experience when we click this button.
It should automatically
already got the authentication and brings us into the application. And this time it doesn't crash since we now have the server running. And this is where
So what it did there was it had your Facebook authentication. It called back over into the server, which in this case is running on your local host, called into that service, and it registered with an API key. So the next time you launch this app, of course, with the virtual machine or what's it called with the phone?
Phone emulator.
Phone emulator. So with that, every time you start it up, it's like Groundhog Day and it's a brand new phone. But it's normally on a real phone, it's going to save that information once, and it's going to know your Facebook information, your live ID, and your API key every time.
Exactly. And so when I go in and I fill this out and say, let's fill in some information for this person who I just met, and we use the pickers on that. And I'm going to say that I have brown hair, even though I have black hair, because the motor vehicle department told me I'm not allowed to have black hair. And I would say I'm average, but I'll put tall. And do we have scruffy under facial hair?
We should.
We should. Because I'm certainly not clean. Okay, so let's save this. And before we save it, let's drop into the phone repository, save, and put a breakpoint and see what it does. Okay, so this is where we're going to save it, and we're saving it in two ways. We're saving it locally, and we're also saving it on the server, if the server is available. So the first thing we look is to make sure that you have a first name and a last name filled in. Now, in theory, we should never get here because that save button would be dim if either of these is blank. But in any case, we do check that. Okay, so we're now ready to hit F10. I'm actually going to do that by using the step into button, if I could find that. There it is. Which is equivalent to pressing F11, but because we're recording this, we've got a conflict in hotkeys. So we'll hit F11. It checks to see whether the person's person ID is equal to 0. Is this a new person? And we can quickly validate that, in fact, it's got all the information that we put in, but the person ID is 0. We haven't gotten a person ID from the server yet. Mm-hmm. And so we are going to step into that. And what we see is that we set the person ID to our collection count plus 1. So what's the collection? We actually, and this is a first approximation of how we're going to do things, but it's worth taking a quick look at. We actually have two collections, one called people, and that's the collection of all the people that the phone knows about. And the other is called people from server, and that's the collection of all the people that the server knows about. And our goal is to keep those consistent with each other, but to be able to record new people even if the server is not available. So what we're doing in this save is we're getting an ID by asking people, that's the local one, for its count plus 1, and then we're setting a flag saying it's not yet on the server. We then are going to add to that people collection the person we just created, and then we step into synchronize with server. Synchronize with server is going to get the context, and then it's going to call load async and try to load that collection of everybody we know about on the server. If that succeeds, it's going to come back asynchronously down here to synchronize with server complete, where we're going to merge those two lists. And the way we do that is we extract from the local list of people who are on the client only those people who have the flag not yet on server set to true. We then take that collection and merge it with the collection we got from the server. And then down here at step 3, we call begin save changes. And that writes that list back to the server asynchronously. So when we return from that asynchronous call, which is here, synchronize with server finalize, we know that that has succeeded, and so therefore that list has matched, and we can go through the local collection and set that flag to false.
So let me interrupt for a second. And here's what I would say. I was there when we wrote this code, And I know that this is hard to follow. Like, I can barely follow this as you're showing it now. And it's just because it's complicated. We're doing a lot of things. We're merging two lists, and that, because we're on the phone, that requires an async fetch and an async save. And so that's why there's those four steps. It's the begin get from the server, merge them up, begin save to the server, and then say we're complete. And so at any of those steps, it could fail. And so that's why there's those four steps. And I think, Jesse, this was one place where we were talking about this code is a very good use case for reactive extensions at some point.
Yes, and it's very much on my to-do list to rewrite this using Rx, because that will flatten out this entire process into a single, easy-to-follow method. And I think it'll make a really good follow-up full stack on looking at this method as it is now, which is hard to follow, and then looking at it with reactive extensions, and ideally that will be a much simpler thing to follow.
But the overall kind of flow is we're tracking two collect. There's a list of people on the phone. You could go, you may be at a conference or somewhere where you don't have any phone service for a week at a time, and you enter 20 people in. And then meanwhile, you may have also entered some other people on the server that aren't on your phone, because the idea is that there's this phone client and you can go up to an internet kiosk or something and enter in, or on your laptop or whatever, and enter in 20 other people. And so the whole goal of this flow is to synchronize those two together. And we actually have on the server, we have client assigned ID and a server assigned ID, and we have to keep those both tracked.
Right, and you are getting the complete collection from the server of everybody that is tied to your API key. You're not getting everything from the server, but still you are getting the complete collection. And my feeling about that is that improving upon that is an optimization, and we ought to do that optimization if and when we can demonstrate that there is a noticeable performance hit, that people have enough people in their collection that it matters. But right now, for simplicity, we just bring down the entire collection, append to it, invite it back.
Have we shown the searching?
Let's take a quick look at that. Let me continue running here. Now, that has written it both locally to local storage, and right now for local storage we're using Sterling. We may continue to do that. However, with the Mango release of the phone, there is support for SQL CE, so we'll certainly take a look at switching over to using that. But we do want to have the support of a database rather than purely isolated storage. But in any case, that's been saved, so what we can do now is a query. And the way you do queries, I think we've mentioned this before, is you use the exact same UI. You just fill in any of these fields that are relevant. So you might remember, okay, the person I'm thinking of had short hair, and I don't remember what color it was. I really don't remember much else. Let's just search for everybody with short hair, and up will come that person or a list of all the people with short hair. When you click on them, in this version, you see the details. In a future version, you'll see the photograph as well. Okay, for Microsoft, this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is John Galloway, and this has been the Full Stack.